Imagine discovering that major world events, wars, economic crashes, cultural revolutions, were not random occurrences, but carefully orchestrated performances designed by a hidden elite. This is the startling premise of Conspirators' Hierarchy, the Committee of 300. The book maps an alleged shadow government comprising aristocratic families, banking dynasties, royal bloodlines, and influential leaders who supposedly direct world affairs through an intricate control network. This secretive organization reportedly traces its origins to the British East India Company's powerful merchant bankers of the 1700s, evolving from a commercial alliance into today's sophisticated power structure. Their ultimate goal? Establishing a post-industrial zero-growth society under centralized global governance, a world where national sovereignty dissolves and unelected elites hold absolute control. At the heart of this alleged conspiracy stands the Committee of 300, an elite group operating through multiple layers of front organizations. The membership reportedly includes familiar names, banking families like the Rothschilds and Warburgs, industrial dynasties like the Rockefellers, European royalty, and influential political figures such as Henry Kissinger. These aren't shadowy unknowns, but highly visible public figures who allegedly advance their agenda behind a carefully maintained veneer of legitimacy. The operational structure functions through interconnected organizations with specific purposes. The Club of Rome focuses on environmental policy and population control. The Bilderberg Group coordinates Western political interests. The Council on Foreign Relations shapes foreign policy. The Trilateral Commission harmonizes cooperation between global powers. Rather than direct coercion, their methodology relies on financial manipulation through central banking, psychological operations through controlled media, and strategic policy implementation through captured institutions. A key tactic involves orchestrating crises that generate public demand for pre-planned solutions, a problem-reaction-solution paradigm enabling gradual societal transformation while maintaining an illusion of democratic process. One of the most compelling arguments concerns America's industrial decline, portrayed not as unfortunate economic evolution, but as deliberate sabotage. The post-WW2 economic boom had created unprecedented middle-class prosperity and independence, threatening the committee's control. Their solution? A calculated deindustrialization program disguised as economic inevitability. This process allegedly began during the 1970s when committee-connected organizations promoted concepts like limits to growth and post-industrial society. These seemingly benign theories provided intellectual cover for policies systematically dismantling American manufacturing. The evidence includes America's steel industry collapse, where unfavorable trade policies, strategic disinvestment, and crushing regulatory burdens made domestic production unprofitable. Similar patterns played out across automotive manufacturing in Detroit, electronics in New England, and textiles throughout the South. The consequences have been devastating. Millions of high-paying jobs lost, once thriving industrial cities transformed into urban wastelands, and America's self-sufficient productive capacity hollowed out. Meanwhile, financial services expanded, creating an illusion of prosperity while increasing dependence on banking institutions. What appears as economic evolution was allegedly a carefully orchestrated transfer of power from a self-reliant middle class to a global financial elite. The Tavistock Institute for Human Relations, founded in 1921, stands as, allegedly, the world's leading mind control and social engineering organization. They pioneered mass brainwashing techniques that were refined during World War II before being directed at civilian populations. Their methodology centers on creating psychological shocks, manufactured crises that disorient populations and make them susceptible to guidance. By overwhelming the public with contradictory information and unsolvable problems, they induce maladaptive responses where people surrender their decision-making to authorities. This explains increasing public acceptance of rights violations, international control over domestic policies, and expanding surveillance. These psychological operations aim to break down traditional social structures, family, religion, national identity, replacing them with artificial constructs that facilitate global governance. Even counterculture movements of the 1960s are portrayed as designed programs to fragment social cohesion. When we feel overwhelmed by world complexity and think, "What can one person do?" we're experiencing precisely the intended effect of these operations. One of the most explosive claims involves the global drug trade, portrayed not as a criminal enterprise opposed by governments, but as a committee-controlled operation with centuries-old roots. This narrative begins with the British East India Company's opium trade with China and continues through modern banking institutions like HSBC, allegedly founded on opium profits. This controlled drug trade serves multiple objectives, generating enormous black market profits flowing through committee-controlled banking systems, weakening communities through addiction, and justifying expanded surveillance and police powers. The intelligence agencies supposedly fighting drugs are portrayed as actually managing the trade, with CIA operations in Southeast Asia, Afghanistan, and Latin America all serving committee interests. Even drug culture promotion through entertainment and media allegedly represents deliberate social engineering rather than organic cultural expression. The British invasion of rock music in the 1960s is portrayed as an operation to normalize drug use among American youth, with bands like the Beatles unwittingly serving as cultural vectors. When we wonder why governments seem unable to win the war on drugs despite endless resources, this perspective offers a disturbing alternative explanation. Perhaps the most thought-provoking insight concerns the committee's alleged control of both political left and right, creating the illusion of choice while ensuring policy continuity on issues that matter to the elite. This controlled opposition strategy explains why fundamental changes rarely occur, regardless of which party holds power. The pattern extends to American politics, where every presidential election supposedly features candidates selected by committee-connected organizations. The differences involve style and rhetoric rather than substance on core concerns like central banking, globalization, and military interventionism. Even administrations campaigning against the establishment quickly fill with committee loyalists, ensuring policy alignment with globalist objectives. The most dramatic example of committee control was allegedly the Watergate operation removing President Nixon, portrayed not as investigative journalism's triumph, but as a carefully orchestrated coup directed by Henry Kissinger and Alexander Haig. Nixon's real crime wasn't the Watergate break-in, but defiance of committee directives on China policy and economic matters. This served as a warning to future presidents about defying committee authority, a warning reinforced by Kennedy's assassination, described bluntly as a public execution for similar defiance. Despite the committee's seemingly overwhelming power, there's hope. Their primary weapon isn't military force, but psychological manipulation, which loses effectiveness once exposed. Their obsession with controlling information through media ownership, academic orthodoxy, and dismissing alternative perspectives as conspiracy theories reveals their vulnerability, an informed public that recognizes manipulation. Practical resistance requires developing adaptive responses instead of the maladaptive responses their psychological operations trigger. This means questioning official narratives, recognizing patterns across seemingly unrelated events, and overcoming learned helplessness. By mapping connections between institutions, revealing how the same individuals circulate between corporate boards, think tanks, and regulatory agencies, the unified control system becomes visible. Whether you accept these specific claims or remain skeptical, the core message resonates in our era of increasing centralization. Liberty requires eternal vigilance, especially against threats disguised as protection. Resistance begins by asking, who benefits from the crises shaping our world? Our freedom begins where our fear ends, with the courage to see beyond the illusions crafted to contain us.